It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine like jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all husbands with the same interest.
Hello and welcome. It's John Pollock along with Court Bauer. It's week two, consecutive episodes of Bauer and Pollock coming at you. Court, what is good?
Oh, not much. Just looking at this Twin Peaks teaser here. I can't wait for that show to drop next year. Are you a big fan of Twin Peaks?
Never seen it.
How have you worshipped Dallas but have never watched Twin Peaks?
I hear great things about Twin Peaks.
You need to get on the Netflix, fire that bitch up, and enjoy it. It is a fun, weird show. And then season two happens. But the first year was a great year. Sophomore slump killed the show.
Have you watched the new season of Narcos?
I am on episode three.
Okay, we'll discuss it when you're done.
We'll get there.
Very good season, in my opinion.
How's it end? Never mind.
You know what? There's a coworker of mine who was watching it and didn't want me to ruin anything about what happens to Pablo at the end.
Don't wake you'll be Pablo.
I guess it's a surprise.
That's awesome, actually. That's actually really great to be able to experience this that way. Well, spoiler alert for anyone listening, by the way. We should just move on now.
Is that a spoiler alert?
Clearly it is in your office.
Well, apparently so. Each week when Court and I do this show, we usually have a list of topics. And this week, Court sent me a list. And on a week where TNA's future is very much at the forefront of many people's minds, the WWE just had a record low rating for Raw. We've got a Ring of Honor pay-per-view. The UFC has just taken on a number of celebrity investors. The number one topic on Court's list, folks, WWE's zombie wrestling line of Halloween apparel. That is where Court wants to start.
I think it's great timing in some ways because Halloween's around the corner. But it's also the second I saw the ad on the WWE website, I thought, that's cool. But I'm thinking, you know, it's kind of ghoulish given the amount of deaths in pro wrestling. I mean, yes, I can see it's just plain fun. But then at the same time, I'm like,
come on, it's Halloween, Court.
Yeah, I guess. It's just there was once upon a time someone made a really, really off color bad joke many moons ago about zombies when it was just getting to be a huge thing again, saying, it'd be great. Imagine if we could really do a zombie invasion with all the dead wrestlers. So I was like, oh my God.
Well, I don't think that this line of clothing or costumes are going to consist.
You didn't look at the link, and that just says that you're just not ready for this podcast. We should stop the podcast.
I'm looking at this link right now.
Figures. There's figures with the.
Yeah, Triple H, The Rock, Dean Ambrose, The Undertaker. Yeah. So three out of the four of them are living, and The Undertaker, I guess, is up for interpretation of his character. Paige, yes. John Cena. I mean, Paige, I mean, she's so pale that, I mean, it's not really that much of a change here in her figure. Bray Wyatt and zombie Roman Reigns, all $12.99 on Amazon Prime.
Well, the way Roman sells, I mean.
Look at Triple H. Triple H has green skin here. He looks like the incredible HHH Hulk. Zombie Rock. Zombie Ambrose. Ambrose, actually, when I look at this figure, this could be a departure from his current character, and it might work. Kind of in the broken Matt Hardy vein. A broken Ambrose in this zombie look. The zombie one kind of looks cool for Dean Ambrose. I mean, that's a badass action figure.
Yeah. Listen, I think these are cool kind of concept toys.
I don't see these as tasteless, Court.
I'm not saying that. I'm just, but you know, it just made me think of someone making a very tasteless remark long ago.
Well, that's your PTSD of working in the wrestling industry.
Oh, please. I know. But you know, there is something that may be considered a zombie in wrestling right now. It's TNA.
Oh, What a segue.
There you go, baby. I'm back.
I've missed these.
You know, you can cut off the arm of TNA, the legs, and it'll still find a way to crawl and keep coming at you because it will not die. And here we are, almost on the eve of their pay-per-view, which is
Sunday night, Bound for Glory.
It's just about what I'm terrible at math. I'm thinking that's a little over 48 hours from the time we're recording this. I was trying to get real accurate, but my math does not help me there. And you look at the guides, and it's not listed for most guys. And I will tell you, having brokered pay-per-view deals in the past, let's not talk about too much. But you typically, I didn't do the production, just the deal. You typically, I'll say that they'll be on my grave and people still not like understand, but you look at those deals and you do have a deadline to, if a company's uncomfortable, you have a deadline to reassure them. And sometimes their reassurances depend on what their concerns are. If it's a secondary uplink for the satellite, well, all these technical things or financial things, marketing things, but you usually have a cutoff and then they're just not going to bend on adding you to their listings and airing your pay-per-view. Some of the smaller companies, yeah, you have more wiggle room because they're smaller. It's gotten harder to work with, like, for example, DirecTV because they were acquired by AT&T. A lot of people tell you right now, in the last year, it's been very challenging to work with them unless you have everything lined up way in advance and you are 100% a pro and do good business. It's very hard right now. So the conditions are difficult, but it's not like you can just wave a wand today or this weekend and all of a sudden it's going to just start to pop up in a lot of people's listings, which is unfortunate, because if they do pull off the financing and everything goes well, a lot of people will probably not be able to celebrate and enjoy watching TNA on Sunday night with what was their equivalent to, I guess, their WrestleMania pay-per-view. It's their big show of the year. And you look how half a decade ago, how they were building that show up with the star power versus what they're doing now, with a new wave of talent, which I think in the end would work better for a company than what they were doing 5 years ago. It's just sad to see, with a lot of good things going on, so much still to be determined, so much in jeopardy.
Yeah, and a lot of this feels as though so many of these tapings and the problems they've had this year is just finding these band-aid solutions to get to the next tapings and to the next tapings. And it looks like this is, how can we make this viable? How can we continue going on this for the long term and not have these continual financial struggles? And I mean, in the matter of like full disclosure here, I mean, Fight Network is also a television partner with Impact. So to make that clear as well, and do have a small share here in TNA. So going forward, I mean, they have to somehow be able to get this financing and also create revenue streams, Court. I mean, that to me is one of the biggest problems, is that they have their international TV deals. And beyond that, I mean, they're not touring. They do two pay-per-views a year that are doing minimal business. And the creative, I don't think that's even that big of an issue at this point, whether it's good or bad. I think the shows have largely been much improved over the past year.
I think, yeah, and no, the shows have been more stable. The focus has been on the right type of talent. But at the same time, there's massive issues, massive debt issues. There's massive.
Exactly. It's the creative is, it's like if you had the greatest wrestling program in the world right now, you're still, it's only 350,000 homes or viewers that are watching every week on Pop TV. You have a very small platform. And what percentage of those, what are you even doing with those viewers? Because you're not sending them to live events every weekend. You're not asking them to pay $30 every month for a pay-per-view. It's not anything at this point where you can look at this with a 5-year plan and state that we can do this, this, and this. The current setup as it is, they're very financially strapped, and it's finding an answer to all of this, and that's not some quick fix.
No.
And that's kind of been alluded to by Billy Corgan in his interviews this week, that he is attempting to get the majority control here, but this is going to be a long-term game.
And you don't have people knocking on the doors to do licensing deals for video games, broaden your international reach, upgrade your domestic TV deal, which is now a barter deal. You don't have Live Nation coming and say they want to tour with you and do events domestically or abroad in terms of house shows. You don't have big title sponsors. You don't even have a Morphoplex like Larry Zbyszko's company back in the day. So, I mean, there's so many things. It's so hard. It's not impossible. It never is. But this company has an uncanny ability to kick out at 2.9. Will they this Sunday, October 2nd? We'll see. And, you know, it's for the business's best interest that, they do, but also with that, get a good injection of capital that allows the talent, the crew, the people in the office to be paid on time and not have to suffer along with their families like they have been inconsistently over the last few years. They're due that. You know, I want to see a company stabilize, but be able to do that, because without that, it's, you know, okay, you live to fight another day. Maybe the fans get something out of it, but there's a lot of people that are briefly suffering if there's a lag time of 2 to 3 weeks in pay. And it just can't continue to be. And Billy Corgan has done quite the media tour to back that up and has spoken about it, but it's a complicated sale. It's a complicated sale because, she had Dixie Carter and Panda Energy had to, make certain business decisions to keep the company going. And, when you split up a company, the points to a company and start handing those out, when you want to do a sale, it gets complicated and not everyone's necessarily on board. And an acquisition gets a little harder. And to the outside, if you're a third party looking to acquire TNA, buy TNA, whatever you're going to do with it, now it becomes a little less appealing because of those complications. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and we don't know any of this compared to what those on the inside know. And one day I'm certain there'll be some fun, crazy stories shared about these times by those in the company living it, that right now it's a very hard time for them. And so my thoughts go out to the crew, the office, and the talent that are enduring what they're enduring right now. It's not a fun thing. It's a horrible thing for them to not know where they're going to be and what their job's going to be necessarily in a week, let alone a month. So hopefully things work out for them.
Yeah, it's largely wait-and-see mode. Yeah. I mean, we really don't have anything that we can add update-wise until the show goes down Sunday. They're scheduled to do tapings Monday through Saturday. And you figure, Court, if they were taping two episodes a night, that takes them till the end of 2016 if they get through these tapings. It is an if, and Billy Corgan has suggested as such. I mean, in these interviews, it's not as though he was adamant about any of this. It was very much that this is a fluid situation. There are a lot of moving parts. He has mentioned the involvement of the WWE at the table, and it's going to be a case of whether they get this financing or not. And that's essentially what everyone is waiting on to see. And that's all we can say at this point.
Yeah, the clock is ticking on them, and we'll see how the next 48 hours plus play out. But it's also, you know, there's so many different ways this could play out. You could also have something where it could go to bankruptcy. It also, like we talked about, could be acquired by another party. This thing could shake out a million different directions. If you're Vince McMahon, you wait until this goes to bankruptcy, just like he did with ECW, because then you're paying pennies on the dollar. There's no real strategic advantage he gets by putting up more money than he did for WCW, which is essentially what they're looking for right now. So I don't see that as a strategic position he'll take in terms of acquiring this. I think people connect WWE to acquiring this right now. I think it's a little premature. Another interesting thing talking about TNA is they are, as of this week, offering big, and I do mean really good, contracts to ex-WWE guys as of this week, which is an interesting...
None of this adds up.
Interesting wrinkle in all this. And sometimes wrestling, they don't add up by design. Other times it's wrestling, and that's exactly why it doesn't add up, because it's wrestling, and it's just screwy sometimes. We'll see. We'll see how this whole thing, comes together or falls apart. Again, in 48 hours or so. Will they get a stay of execution, or will it be something more substantial? I hope more substantial. Stay of execution does nothing in the long run.
We should also mention and send our best wishes to Jamie Noble. It was reported this morning by Ryan Satin at Pro Wrestling Sheet that earlier this week at his trailer home, he was stabbed. after an incident where a car pulled up as he was getting home, accusing Noble of cutting him off. And there were two other guys in the car, and this ended up getting physical and led to Noble being stabbed, I believe, twice, and then being taken to the hospital. So hopefully he is going to be okay from this. But that was certainly an alarming story, Court.
Oh, it's troubling. But I'm glad he's going to be okay. It sounds like it was a pretty vicious attack. Yeah, it's no good there. And I'm talking about other people that are going through some stuff. At WWE, Paige hinted this week on social media that surgery is in her future. She referenced a doctor who's very well known for spinal and neck issues. I believe he worked on Tyson Kidd down in the Tampa area. So looks like she may be going under the knife soon. And if so, you know, at 24, you know, that's so early to go under the knife. And so I wish her the best. And, of course, Finn Balor also underwent a procedure this week due to a cartilage defect. So
did you watch the video of this? Because they posted it.
No. I
this interest. Was something else. I mean, I found this fascinating just to watch this stem cell treatment that he got in his shoulder, where he's like hammering into the shoulder, and then they took, I believe it was blood out of his pelvis, and then they show the whole process of actually like straining the blood to get out any bone marrow, and then injecting it into, they have to obviously process the blood and stream it and then place it back into the shoulder. Quite fascinating to watch, actually.
Yeah, guys like Rey Mysterio have had similar treatments done for different injuries. Baseball players have had this done. Germany.
Rey swears by it.
Yeah, there's a company out of Germany, a group out of Germany that's been doing it for years. So
that's where Dana White got his Meniere's disease taken care of.
Yeah. Germany knows what's up with that stuff. But it's an interesting thing, and what they're doing with stem cells research is pretty fascinating. On a brighter note, looking at something positive, WWE is looking for a few good men and women, and they had some tryouts this week down in Orlando, and one of the Four Horsewomen happened to be at the tryouts. She had been working recently in on indies. Did you hear anything about this?
Yes, she is down there along with Heidi Lovelace.
Who is she, though? I did not mention her name.
Shayna Baszler is who we're talking about. Yes. Of course, most people recognize her as a former fighter with the UFC, a longtime female fighter. And Heidi Lovelace is the one she headlined the recent AIW show with that Ronda Rousey showed up at, that yours truly attended live. And clearly, my attendance led to so much publicity for this show, while Ronda just tried to get some headlines off of myself and Wei Ting appearing there. And now she's got a tryout. I'm high on both of them. I think Heidi Lovelace should be signed. I think she's very talented. And Shayna Baszler she's only been doing this a year at this point. So those were two that were there. Others including Eddie Kingston, who everybody would be familiar with.
I like Eddie Kingston. He's very intense, very real. Jacob Fatu, son of the Tonga Kid out of the West Coast, San Francisco area. Jacques Rougeau's 7'6", 300-pound son, Cedric the Entertainer. Rougeau was there.
Oh, man, he's going to be Alexander's teammate.
Oh, my God, imagine.
Cedric's the Entertainers.
Oh, my gosh. And, of course, former Buffalo Bill fullback Corey Knox. So
Corey Knox.
And also Shimmer champion Soo Young. So quite a group. I like where they're reaching out. You got some legacy guys like Jacob Fatu and Rougeau.
Rougeau?
How the hell you say that name? I'm tongue-tied today.
Our Quebecois listeners are just shaking their head at you, Corey.
No, I'm a little rusty on the podcasting scene. I haven't spoken for 7 weeks here. I'm just getting back into it. And another interesting name that's kind of, I guess, on the radar, and we'll see what happens there, is Kozlov. File under, I'm confused, but WWE.com actually did a profile on him, and I guess there is some interest. He looks great. I mean, he's got a different look. He's got a beard. He's jacked. I don't know. At most, maybe I could see him as like a heater for Rusev, but I don't know. I mean, mechanically in the ring, it never was really there. I hear he's a really gregarious guy, but never translated to the screen, kind of like Malenko. I don't know. Do you want to see a Kozlov return to WWE, or would you prefer a Kozlov podcast? If you had to pick between the two.
The Kozlov podcast. Maybe that was Santino's idea, was doing a talk show along with or doing some kind of comedy with Vladimir Kozlov. They were really close. So maybe they could do a podcast together.
You never know. There are many, many podcasts. Have you heard the Rybacks podcast?
I heard the first episode.
How'd that go?
I mean, it was interesting just to hear his kind of perspective. I mean, this was like a month ago he started doing this with Pat Buck, and it was just the major takeaway for me was just how, I mean, he's so linked with CM Punk because of this feud that brewed out of Punk's podcast with Cabana 2 years ago. And you listen to this and it was like, man, these two had just parallel experiences, it feels like. And a lot with just feeling that they were undervalued in the company, that they could have been more valuable. It was very interesting to hear.
Yeah.
But you know that the name of the podcast, it could have been much more marketable as Hear Me More.
Oh, see, there you go. That's why they call you John the Big Pun Pollock. I forgot your last name for a moment. What else is going on in the world of wrestling?
Well, two people watched Raw on Monday night,
yes.
And it was the lowest rated Raw ever.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there any cause for concern about these numbers, Corey? Maybe not this past Monday.
Bit. I think just a little bit.
Well, this week was extenuating circumstances.
They're always extenuating circumstances. It's like the old promoter thing. Well, it rained. That's why we had a bad walk-up, or we didn't do any business today.
Well, fair enough. Let's look at the prior 2 weeks where they were only facing Monday Night Football, and we're dipping real low, Court. When we're talking these mid 2 million viewed hours,
well,
it's kind of stunning how they have broken it down to this core that is watching Raw. I mean, these are numbers that are kind of stunning from a generation ago.
Well, there's a direct
hell, an Olympic cycle ago.
I'll say this. You look at how many households have TV. I don't care about cord cutting. Look how many households have cable TV, and what you should see as where the number should be. If anything, you think maybe with cord cutting, but new households and new interest, maybe it stayed flat. The fact that there's such a sharp decline in spite of the amount of households that now have cable TV versus 10, 15 years ago, it's very hard to make a case for this being okay, that things are okay, viewer patterns are changing.
That only accounts for so much, and that doesn't – I mean, cord cutting is not a way to look at the – because the rating is only measuring those that actually have the USA Network. I think this is it's a decline that you cannot just simply bury your head and blame on – just outside factors. I think there's a core popularity issue here. It's also at a time when I feel the WWE has presented this 3-hour behemoth at you every Monday night and made it very easy for you to, if you want to follow along and just watch a few segments on YouTube or elsewhere or just skip it altogether, they've made that decision really easy for you because God, do you have to be dedicated to be watching this week in and week out?
You do. And, you know, now more than ever, it's like it's time to start cherry picking. What do you want? Do you want to watch your New Japan World? Do you want to watch your NXTs? And people are cherry picking. They're finding the good. They're finding what they want. And there's a lot of competition, but I don't see anyone breaking out of the pack. I don't see Lucha Underground breaking out of the pack. In fact, if you look at Lucha Underground –
there has been no buzz on that show since it's come back for this third season,
no.
And the numbers have just decreased each week. Even Lucha Underground has never been, you know, doing massive numbers, but you at least get the chatter, the discussion about it, and it just seems it's just almost non-existent for this season, and I wonder if the 40 episodes for season 3, you're not building to anything in the immediate. It's this long road to the climax of this show. And there's a lot of options, as you mentioned out there, that I just don't know what it is, if they've come back too soon after season 2 or what it is.
Well,
but there's something missing this season that the first two had that
absolutely.
This one is lacking.
And you look at it, and this past week, week 4 of the new season, did their lowest total viewership of the year, 2016. not the season, but the year.
So that includes season two episodes.
And the first viewing, the first airing drew only 85,000 viewers this week, down from 99,000 the past 2 weeks. If you look at the amount of money put into this product and its inability to grow, to get international distribution deals, to just sustain buzz, generate buzz, they've really failed their investors at this point. And so, you know, it's troubling. And there's a lot of great talent there, and there's a fan base that does love it, but can they grow it beyond being a boutique product? And right now, it does not look like that. In fact, now you're almost wondering, you know, if there's a better option on the Wednesday night, are people going for that, whatever that is, on TV, sports, or whatever is going on in the world? So, yeah, it's not good for them. And, you don't see even that social media push from the fans that was there, that enthusiasm that was there a year or two ago, which is disheartening. It's, and I'm not saying it's their fault. It's just, I'm saying, and when it comes to the fans, I'm saying, but they're neither a true TV show and a promotion. And because of that, I think they're like failing to be what they desire. And so, they're kind of half pregnant with this venture at this point. And, is it doomsday? No. This company is funded by two billionaires. They're not going anywhere as long as the billionaires want to continue down this road. So this thing could be around for 10 years. But they're going to need to hopefully turn this into a more viable vehicle. But for the time being, they're never going to be at risk at losing their TV slot. El Rey Network owns a piece of, the property. They're not going anywhere. So, the usual issues that you would have when you have these kind of symptoms don't threaten this show. So if you're a fan of the show, just spread the word. Hopefully people start checking it out because there's great talent on there. And there's also great talent in NXT. You look at the upcoming Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. And surprisingly, this is a name that shocked me, John. Kota Ibushi.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Riddick Moss.
Well, that was the second name I was going to mention. But
Kota Ibushi is in this tournament with Hideo Itami, yeah, as they mentioned on Thursday. Apparently not signed. But
how weird is that?
Is willing to do dates with them. I mean, it's...
I mean, but it's weird. It's strange, right?
Let's just run through the names that are in this. In addition to Itami and Ibushi, you have the tag champions, The Revival, Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, Cedric Alexander and Andrade Cien Almas, Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger, Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli, TM61, The Bollywood Boys, and then Sawyer Fulton and Alexander Wolf. Which some of the matches have already been taped. We won't spoil anything for you because I always hear it from people when we do.
When it comes to NXT and Twin Peaks, we're not going to fuck that up for you guys.
But you look at this lineup. I think there's what you always enjoy about tournaments is you can see multiple directions of where they can go, different combinations, feuds that can come out of this. Hopefully you have some contenders for the Revival, not just the winners, but I would think you could have the Revival lose in the tournament, very much the G1 style of booking the IWGP champion. Right. And this this was very well received last year. And almost most interesting is how they do the presentation ceremony, Court, because last year that was a big part of this, the visual of the whole Rhodes family. And this year you would presume that two of those people won't be back for this in Cody and Brandy.
Well, if they want them back, there's a way to get them back. I don't know what the TNA thing, I understand TNA deal is pretty flexible. They can do a lot of outside stuff. So if that's true, and I don't have that contract to look at, but,
maybe they can make a deal where Cody will do an appearance in exchange for his father's famous last name.
There are ways to make a deal, but the problem is I don't think there's going to be that effort made to do a deal, even if, you know, if a contract is an issue or not. I don't necessarily see that happening, but you have if you have Goldust there and you have Dusty's widow Michelle, or maybe this is the year that you have them sit ringside and then Hunter presents the trophy. There's a million ways you can do this. The pageantry, you're right, won't be the same, but seeing Kenta in this tournament, Kota Ibushi, together, it's going to be a really interesting teaming up. But at the same time, I'm looking at Kenta. I want to see him on the main roster, man. I want to see that guy shredding on the main roster. He's no spring chicken. And now more than ever, I think it's time to get some. They need it on the main roster. So let's. Why is he part of NXT unless he's going to really be a coach slash player? Why is he on the NXT roster?
Well, I think with him, I see other guys that are ahead of him at this point, namely Joe Nakamura.
Of course, absolutely.
I feel with Tommy, he's really kind of struggled in this role.
Struggled just to call him Tommy. I always call him Kenta still, so I apologize for that, everyone. I just cannot remember that name even now. But Hideo Itami, I just think that you're right.
You're not wrong though. It's like these guys that are just getting up there in age. It's how much do you dedicate to their time in NXT? But I think their thinking is that this guy hasn't gotten over to the expectation of when he first came in here, and on top of that shoulder injury that took him out forever, he's still trying to regain some of that momentum. But I feel a lot of these guys, when you're looking at the depth issues on the main roster, NXT, just to me, that's not the priority when the main roster could really utilize some of these guys. You only need a handful of guys to be top guys in NXT, and then it should be elevating the younger guys, and it's just a natural progression to the main roster. I mean, how long are we going to see Joe and Nakamura here?
Yeah, well, I mean, they have to – there's a balancing act, and it's when do you flip the switch? You have some great talent like Roderick Strong, Tommy Yen, all coming in, many other guys too.
And only an hour of television.
Only an hour of television, but you now are propped up to be a touring roster, a touring company onto itself, a touring brand. And so if you're going to do Las Vegas in December, if you're going to do Europe, if you're going to do Singapore and Australia coming up, you know, you got to have enough guys out there that are over.
And Mandalay Bay, no less, is where they're running. That's 11,000 seats if they don't curtain anything off. That's a big venue in Vegas, no less. I mean, you have a lot of options in Vegas, so that's going to be an interesting one to see what they draw in Vegas.
NXT TakeOver Sin City.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a takeover.
We'll see. We'll see. That's 11,000 seat house.
It probably should be a takeover to run a venue that size.
When I hear that venue and I look at the schedule and I'm thinking, when's the next takeover? It's possible. It's possible.
When's the date for that Vegas show? Isn't it like the first week of December?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think it's towards the end of the beginning of December, which is also interesting because...
Okay, it's December 17th. I thought this was much closer to the Toronto show. So it's a month apart if you want it, and it's a Saturday night. Yeah. So if you wanted to make that a take, that would make a lot of sense to be a takeover. Your year-end show, that size... It actually makes a lot of sense.
And that is our speculation segment of the podcast.
Sure.
It's total speculation on all of it. But
our grain of salt.
We have no idea when the damn show was. But also that month, WWE's booked two big shows for Christmas, their Christmas holiday swing in New York. Very rare to do two that close together in proximity. But they'll be at the Garden on December 26th, the day after Christmas, which I'm sure a lot of the boys will love if they have to fly in the night before. And they'll be...
Which is a Monday night show, too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then on the 28th, they'll be in Brooklyn for the first time. They're doing two shows so close in proximity, I can't remember. They've, of course, been in Brooklyn a lot, but the first time doing the show so close. Since maybe they did it once or twice with the Meadowlands and the Garden, but man, I don't know. I can't remember. But it tells you about the appetite for wrestling in the market. And we, of course, saw just last month that with SummerSlam, you can do back-to-back-to-back nights. You don't want to do it too often, but they're going to try it here in December, and
And here in Toronto in November, they got TakeOver, Survivor Series, and Raw all three nights at the Air Canada Center in Toronto.
Then Jim Ross in the Raw as he does Toronto again. So that's another thing for Toronto fans to check out. Cheap plug, but I'm actually not going to be at that show. But it's always a fun time when JR comes through town, huh?
Are you going to be going to any of these New York shows? And if so, will you be taking one of your children under the age of 8? Because you would be theoretically breaking a bylaw in the state of New York.
Uh-oh. No, I will – surprise. I will actually not be in New York when these shows happen. But what's the law?
Well, first of all, I will direct everyone to Mike Johnson's report at PW Insider about the New York State Athletic Commission and their guidelines that they have changed regarding pro wrestling, with with the inclusion of mixed martial arts now being legal, professional MMA in the state, they have changed a bunch of the bylaws and how it's going to affect independent wrestling, such as promoters and their licenses, whether they're going to be able to essentially lend out their license for other shows to be kind of under an umbrella. They've also, there are actually on the books age restrictions on going to pro wrestling events, because you're no person under the age of 16 is allowed to enter as a spectator, or if you're with a parent, they are allowed to bring a child, but only between the ages of 8 and 16. So theoretically, Court, if your child was 6 and you brought them to a wrestling show, that is technically not allowed. What is going on with your state?
Well, it is known as a nanny state, and if you look at some of the laws that are going on right now...
This would have put MLW out of business if you were running up here in the Northeast.
Don't worry, I would have put myself out of business so before they even could get a hold of me. So don't worry, I was my worst enemy when it comes to promoting. That will not be happening again. But, you know, we got UFC coming up in New York. That's a big one.
This card is insane, Court.
Matt,
this is one... I honestly believe this is the most... the deepest card the UFC has ever put together. Knock on wood that no one gets hurt ahead of this, but not even running through all 13 fights. We've got Eddie Alvarez, Conor McGregor, Tyron Woodley, Stephen Thompson, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Karolina Kowalkiewicz. Those are all championship fights. Chris Weidman, Yoel Romero, Donald Cerrone, Calvin Gastelum, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Michael Johnson. Prelims, Court, are going to have Frankie Edgar and Jeremy Stephens, Rashad Evans, Tim Kennedy, Miesha Tate, Raquel Pennington.
Yeah.
I'm not even done yet. This is an insane card.
It's what it
very well could be the biggest pay-per-view they've ever promoted.
Well, there was a lot of people nervous here in my town that they were just going to roll out whatever and say, hey, it's New York, that's big enough.
Monday morning, this was a very different card. Without Weidman, Romero, and Alvarez, McGregor, those two fights added, along with Nurmagomedov and Johnson, which was just announced at the press conference by Dana White.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're looking at what could be the biggest card ever, and that's not hyperbole.
And that is a show I will be at. It's going to be a great time for MMA in New York. You have that, and of course, Combate Americas, which I'll also be at because I work there, which is also going to be on UFC Fight Pass on the 14th and maybe on the Fight Network, I don't know, up on the 14th of October. So that's something to look forward to. And then Scott Coker, he's down in Mexico right now, but he also has been in talks with a few wrestlers, including the Ryback. But it doesn't seem like there's much interest right now, as Ryback has become a constant on today's podcast. But he also met recently with Dave Bautista in London, as Dave is shooting a movie, I understand, over there. And Scott Coker actually tweeted a picture of them in London together. So it's not like it's some breaking news, but that's something that's been out there. What's your take on Scott Coker continually going back to the well with these kind of stunts? I mean, fresh off of CM Punk, they've been criticized at UFC. You can also equally criticize, if not more, Bellator for these band-aids to try to pump up their business instead of get their new generation of fighters over.
Well, I think, first of all, there's more of an appetite for those kinds of ideas in Bellator than UFC. And I mean, to Bellator's defense, I really don't see this Ryback thing happening, and Scott Coker has said as much.
Yeah, but if you take a step back, they've been doing so much of this stuff, this stunt promoting. Whether it's bringing back, dusting off an old legend from MMA or a wrestler, whatever they want to do, they haven't really gotten me hyped up for their core roster, their next generation of stars. They haven't made anyone.
It's certainly a period at this point where I think you have some pieces there, but definitely it's been this theory that, whether it was a Kimbo Slice or a Ken Shamrock, that these big attractions, these stunt fights, for lack of a better term, were going to bring people in, and by extension, that was going to expose them to the Michael Chandlers and Michael Venom Page and so on and so forth, Douglas Lima. But that is something that it's a fine theory, but in actual execution has not been able to bear that out. This idea that just being on the card that is widely viewed is going to transfer that marketability, that star power down on to the other fighters. That just hasn't proven itself out. And they've got some very good fighters on this roster, but it's still been proven that it's these big stunt fights that are gaining the most interest whenever they do them. And I have no doubt Chael Sonnen will bring some of that. I think Chael Sonnen is much less of a stunt than, for say, Dada 5000 was,
Kimbo,
for instance. Yeah, that fight is certainly not one of the more glowing moments in Bellator's history.
Chael
Sonnen is still somebody that this is a legitimate fighter. He's only 39, which in Bellator, he can probably have a lot lengthier of a career than probably at the UFC level fighting top middleweights. So that's where they find themselves. I mean, they've signed Rory McDonald, who you could still argue is in the prime of his career. Benson Henderson, who very much so, still in the prime of his career, maybe is showing slight declines. But that's where they're working towards now. And it's trying to develop younger fighters. I think Michael Chandler is outstanding. But it's still the stars of yesterday that the audience has had the most interest in.
Well, you know, maybe Bellator needs to find some celebrity minority owners like Tom Brady and all the guys that have invested in the UFC. Quickly, we got to talk about some. Read the list of the people involved now as minority owners in the new age of the UFC.
Yes, with WME IMG's purchase of the UFC, they have brought on 23 celebrities that now have small stakes in the company. And here is the roll call, okay? Toronto's own, my good pal, The Weeknd, Adam Levine, Anthony Kiedis, Ben Affleck, Kelvin Harris, Cam Newton, Conan O'Brien, Flea, Guy Fieri, Jimmy Kimmel, LL Cool J, Lena, Maria Sharapova, Mark Wahlberg, Michael Bay, Ron Dreideck, Robert Kraft, Serena and Venus Williams, Sylvester Stallone, Tom Brady, Trey Parker, Tyler Perry, and Court Bauer. Unbelievable, this lineup.
Well, I understand.
Two late night hosts, no less.
I do understand, and I can confirm this at this moment in time, that Triumph the Insult Dog is actually looking to buy TNA. We'll see how this plays out. Breaking news here.
I believe Ed the Sock would be the one that take issue with Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. Big nationalistic feud between those two.
Oh, well, maybe they can put that on Bound for Glory.
I'd be interested in that, actually. Yeah, there's a big history there. Feud brewing, you know?
What?
Ed the Sock, the one and only original.
Tonight, actually, there's another pay-per-view. We have TNA on Sunday, but we also have Ring of Honor. They have All-Star Extravaganza 8, I think, 8.5, like the Naked Gun.
This is a great lineup.
I'll tell you, you have, to me, the biggest selling point for me personally is Dragon Lee making his Ring of Honor debut. He is a badass dude. One of my favorite matches in a long time he had recently at Arena Mexico. He's from CMLL, of course. This is a huge, huge get to put on the show and showcase at a time when I think it's good for Ring of Honor to introduce some new talent and see how they click.
And with his best opponent in Kamatachi,
yeah,
I wonder if this opens.
Match.
Do you think this opens the show?
Oh man, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you put, here's the thing. Yes, it would get a great. I look at it like this. You can, that match gets great energy when you open it up with that, and then you can give it as much time as you want, and then you can adjust accordingly instead of trying to shave off time for a great match down the road on the card of a live show. But at the same time, good luck following that, gentlemen, because you are going to have a tough time. That those guys are terrific. Even though they're going to get used to a different ring surface, the CML ring is totally different than the Ring of Honor ring, and also the ringside area is a little different. But I think these guys are going to do amazing work. They should be allowed to showcase and shred. That's why you bring them in. Don't try to put a ceiling on that. So I think there, you could say, well, this match could be late in the show and really be awesome. I would actually, yeah, I'd actually open up with it. But again, good luck following it.
Yeah, this is a pretty deep card. There's a four-way for a future ROH tag title shot. The Briscoes and Torriano against Jay White, Kushida and ACH, Kyle O'Reilly, Hangman Page, Tetsuya Naito and Jay Lethal, Bobby Fitch, Donovan Dijak, Adam Cole, Michael Elgin, and then the Ladder War, main event with The Addiction, Young Bucks, and Motor City Machine Guns, which is in the headlining position. So I think probably smart placement putting that on last, because I don't know what you could do to follow that with the expectations that might be too high for this ladder match, to be quite honest, just because we've seen everything in ladder matches, and I just hope these six are don't go insane just for the sake of it in this match, especially a guy like Chris Sabin that this guy lost 2 years of his career because of knee problems, and the bar has been set so high that everyone is expecting the greatest ladder match of all time in this one.
Yeah, yeah. He was one of those guys that always blew me away, you know, before the injuries and stuff, and I'd love to see him be able to reinvent himself, to be able to work a style that he could have a longer career and not be repeatedly injured. These kind of matches don't help that cause. You know, and we talk about this weekend in the bookends, Ring of Honor and TNA having pay-per-views. There's another company, major company, that's going to have a major show, but it will be not on pay-per-view or iPay-per-view. It's a little strange, but AAA is going to present Heroes Inmortales 10 this Sunday in Monterey, featuring the return of Alberto El Patron, the former Alberto Del Rio, and Johnny Mundo. It'll air on TV on AAA, AAA Worldwide, over the next 2 weeks in October, or the first 2 weeks of October. So a pretty stacked card there, as well as feuds culminate, and we have the return of Alberto, which I always thought was a curious return, only because when he left, he was very blunt about his feelings towards Dorian Roldan, the president of AAA, and not really too enamored with his dealings with Dorian. Don't expect Alberto back in Lucha Underground. I do not see that in the foreseeable future. But for the time being, a trip down to Monterey for AAA should be an interesting night for him. So AAA is still trying to find their way creatively, but they have a really good roster. And also, coming up, we have New Japan King of the World. I'm sorry, King of the World. New Japan King of Pro Wrestling on October 10th. They have a pretty damn good card. Talk about stacked cards. Here's another one, John.
Yeah, this is going to be going down next Monday, and there's also going to be English commentary on this with Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino, and I think those two are they're excellent on these New Japan shows. I mean, for people that for so long had complained about no English commentary, I think these two they do a fantastic job for these shows where they're flowing over for the shows. Okada is taking on Naomichi Marufuji in the main event, and this is also the return of Katsuyori Shibata. Despite his spinal problems, as he takes on Kyle O'Reilly, where I hope Shibata is alive after this match, and the sane part of me is hoping that Shibata just drops his title and takes some time off, but the realistic side of me believes that Shibata will continue without any time off.
It's a tale of two different types of philosophies and how out of touch New Japan is compared to WWE. You know, how many times this year have they stripped a champion? They introduce the Universal title, and they don't even have a quick flash finish on Finn Balor on Raw. They said, nope, we're starting over because they didn't want to put the guy at further risk or harm physically. New Japan's still entrenched in the old way of doing things, and I fear that Shibata's going to suffer for it. And you'd think Mitsuhara Misawa's demise publicly before a crowd that ultimately has sunk New Pro Wrestling Noah would be something that people would learn from that. But if not, tragically, I fear history can and will probably repeat itself if they don't become more proactive with these guys and their well-being. I really hope Shibata does take time off after this. He has a very serious condition. Anything involving the spine is obviously serious. And I'm sure O'Reilly and Shibata can have an amazing match for the NEVER title, but I'd rather wait and have that match in a few months or whenever it, however long it takes for Shibata to recover. You also have Briscoes versus the Gorillas of Destiny for the IWGP belts. We have the Tokyo Dome IWGP title rights on the line as Kenny Omega puts up his rights in, for the 4th of January against Goto. What do you think of that fight?
It's fine. You know, it's a rematch of the G1 final. I expect, I don't see Omega dropping, his title shot.
It'd be a real letdown, huh?
After last weekend, though, seeing a near half-hour match between Omega and Yoshihashi and the crowd buying into Yoshihashi pinning Omega to take the title shot, I'm sure this crowd will get behind Goto. They had a really solid match in the finals, and it was overshadowed from the night prior with Omega and Naito, which was a legit match of the year contender. And I guess the other thing of note on this show is the junior heavyweight tag titles. It's the Young Bucks against Ricochet and David Finlay, who feels like he's just been inserted into Matt Sydal's spot. And I guess his future with New Japan is in question, as it looks like Finlay has just taken his spot with Ricochet as his tag partner after missing the Destruction shows.
Yeah, and the story goes that Matt Sydal is on sabbatical now in Hawaii. There were some paperwork problems, and we'll see when Matt resurfaces and what the story is.
Well, we will stay tuned for that. He to me is a great fit in that junior heavyweight division, but was not there last week. So David Finlay, though, I mean, this guy's been ready for some time. I'm glad to see them moving him
he's
up.
He's had a great 2016
prior spot.
He's had a great 2016. He is a Finlay. he's in the New Japan Dojo. I mean, of course he was going to be great, you know. It's great to see him, though, merging. And curious to see what happens with Cody Hall, who is kind of fallen off the map ever since the injury earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Very serious injury, and he came home, and he's back still in the States. What happens next to him? Is his career over? Is he going to be back in a month? We'll see. But he had such a presence. He wasn't making the progress that I think a lot of people had hoped for a few reasons. But he certainly had a presence that you can't deny. One of the things that popped out to me was FMW just came back and did a show September 26th as part of the Wing Kenimura Road to Retirement. And what an eclectic mix of talent they had on this thing. For people that love the old 90s Japanese garbage wrestling, and I use that term with incredible respect, but they did a scramble bunkhouse death match. Onita was in it, which, I mean, gosh, Onita wrestling in 2016. Ricky Fuji, another name from the past. Yoshihiro Takeyama. Hideki Hosaka, Wing Kenimura, of course, and a few other guys. Nosawa, I believe, was in there. It was like a crazy match, and ultimately, I guess the outcome, I haven't seen this match, but it sounds like Onita's setting up for another match in November. So Kenimura and Onita and FMW in 2016.
Amazing.
I used to love FMW, so it'll never be what it once was, but what a hell of a run it once had.
Maybe you can get Onita to do a podcast.
We can get Onita. I think we should.
It would have to be done in a parking lot every week with fire.
Oh my God, we should just bring that to
Orlando. And he would have to announce at the end of every show that this is his last podcast.
His last podcast. You've seen the last. We'll be back next week with our new guest here. Yeah, I mean, do Onita Mania as part of Wale Mania in Orlando in 2017. It will be.
How did your man Wale not get a piece of the UFC? Not his thing.
He's more of a pro wrestling guy. He loves it when, like, you know, Brock fights for UFC, those kind of things. And who didn't watch the CM Punk epic squash of doom? But at the same time, yeah, he's a if he was going to put his money into something, I'd say that. The smart money would be on it being in pro wrestling if he was going to pick between the two. But for now, we have Wally Mania. And which, by the way, cheap plug, we'll be putting tickets on sale.
They're never cheap coming from you, Court.
Thank you. We're going to be putting tickets on sale very soon and starting to reveal some information. So look for that at MLW.com. And in the meantime, we also have tickets for part of Wally Mania. Jim Ross has two shows because Wally Mania is going to be a Thursday, a Friday, a Saturday, Sunday, and maybe even a Monday event. So we'll have your kickoff party Thursday night at Tier Nightclub in Orlando. So save the date. Tickets go on sale very soon, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And that's my big plug for the week.
Well, I will squeeze in my plug then, and you can go to liveaudiowrestling.com. We have a million shows from this past week, including myself and Wade just reviewing Vince McMahon's 1993 heel run in the USWA, which is some fascinating television to watch from 93. So that is up now. Sunday night we'll be up on the Law, midnight Eastern, coming out of Bound for Glory, and we'll be chatting with Dave Meltzer, taking calls. I believe we're going to have a guest as well, so you can tune in for that. And as well, if you have time, I was on the Ross Report this past week with good old JR, so you can check that out.
Hashtag sauce it.
On Podcast One.
Definitely a must listen. JR and Big Pun mixing it up. Doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, and not the rapper that was in attendance at WrestleMania 15 either.
No, he died.
Man, you are just all full of happiness today. Man, you really bookended this show, talking about Halloween costumes and taking it into the darkest discussion possible, and now ending it on this. Well, can you leave us with something happy? Do you have like a Hallmark card or a fortune cookie?
How about we go out with a song today? It's Friday afternoon. We're a little late getting the show out. We thought TNA was going to be sold, bankrupted. We didn't know. But let's go out with a song. I'm going to try to say this name for the first time right on this podcast. How about the Rougeau Brothers, All American Boys?
Oh, the best theme song of all time.
Hit it, John.
From Montreal to Memphis, Talez-vous français? Tell all the girls, the Rougeau's on their way.
We'll see you next.